Have you ever eaten a massaged kale salad? It's easy to make, delicious, and really, really healthy. Kale is a type of dark green vegetable that nutrition experts say Americans need to eat a lot more of. The other day I read an interesting study that said if Americans followed the dietary guidelines, we need to grow about 500,000 more acres of dark green vegetables alone. For perspective, here's an aerial view of where I live and work, in one of the most intense vegetable producing areas in the world. During 2013, farmers here grew about 300,000 acres of vegetables. So if Americans started eating the recommended amounts of dark green vegetables, the area to produce these alone would be about 60% greater than the harvested acres for all vegetables here in just 1 year. That's a lot of land. But what concerns me even more is how would we produce these additional vegetables sustainably? And how will we sustainably meet the vegetable demands of the future population that's expected to reach about 9 billion people by 2050? This concerns me because there's clear evidence that common vegetable production practices in many areas haven't been sustainable. Perhaps the best evidence of this in California is a comprehensive assessment of the nitrate pollution problem in Salinas Valley groundwater. This report discusses a variety of factors that caused the problem over decades as the valley transitioned from rain-fed agronomic crops to irrigated high-value crops. It also highlights lots of potential solutions and approaches to solve the problem. The report really helped me to understand the complexity of my question. Let me clarify that question a little bit before I answer it. I'm talking about winter cover crops, like these, that are great at scavenging or recycling leftover nitrogen from previous crops. These cover crops can be grown when fields are typically bare fallow. In the spring, the cover crop biomass is mixed back into the soil to provide many benefits in addition to reducing nitrate leaching. For example, in our long-term research, lettuce grown after cover crops has larger heads and yields much more than lettuce in fields that were bare fallow over the winter. And frequent cover cropping adds organic matter to the soil that makes it less cloddy and less compacted and much easier to farm. By sustainable, I mean a production system with three characteristics. It's got to be profitable. It should also ensure stewardship of our natural resources and provide a good quality of life for all members of the agricultural community. I'm also talking about commercial scale production of high value and high input vegetables. In these types of systems, the yields are pretty similar in organic and conventional systems. Most of these vegetables are shallow rooted, and many of them leave nitrogen-rich residues in the field after harvest. And this residue decomposes quickly to produce nitrates that can then be easily leached into the groundwater during the winter. In addition, these vegetables are often rotated with other high-input crops, which don't help to solve the nitrate leaching problem. All right, so given these clarifications, my general answer to this question would be no. I don't think these types of vegetable production systems, whether they're organic or conventional, can be sustainable without the frequent use of well-managed and carefully selected winter cover crops. Here are some of my main reasons. But we need to be careful not to blindly think of cover crops as a silver bullet. Rather, I like to think of them as one important, unique, and indispensable piece in this complex, sustainable agriculture puzzle that we'll always be trying to figure out and improve. In some ways, I see winter cover cropping as a way to give the soil a rejuvenating rest so that it can function efficiently. Kind of like how we need to get a good night's sleep to function efficiently and to stay healthy. So you might wonder, how do we move forward to increase the adoption of cover cropping in vegetable systems? Let me provide some perspective on why cover cropping is currently so uncommon in Salinas Valley. And then I'll describe three strategies that I think might help to change that. Here's a satellite image of part of Salinas Valley during a typical summer, with the valley floor, where most of the vegetables are grown, surrounded by red. These dark green areas are fields with lots of vegetable leaf cover that are close to harvest. The light brown areas are fields that have already been harvested and are being prepared for maybe another vegetable crop. Here's the same region but during winter. Notice that there are relatively few fields with green cover. and the few green ones are probably winter vegetables or the occasional cover crop. These bare fields may look like this close up right after a water drain event. And this is where we can have lots of runoff and nitrate leaching. Now, a primary reason that many growers here don't grow winter cover crops very often is because the agricultural land rents are extremely high. This means that the growers need to produce several vegetable crops in each field each year to be profitable. And adding a winter cover crop complicates the timing and the management of the vegetable planting. I'll illustrate this with a few balls. Let's assume that a field is scheduled for two vegetable crops that will be planted and harvested between March and September. This red ball will represent the first crop, romaine lettuce. And the blue ball will represent the second crop, broccoli. Now, a rotation with these two crops takes skill to achieve, but it's not overly difficult if the field is left bare fallow during the winter. Now let's add a winter cover crop, a green ball, and see what happens. The rotation gets pretty intense and complicated, and it requires a lot more skill than a two-ball or a two-crop rotation. And the chance of crop failure, that is, dropping the ball, increases. Now, in reality, all the vegetable farmers that I know are managing far more than just two vegetable crops at any time. And things can get pretty complicated pretty fast when you add cover crops to the system. I'll now present three strategies for managing cover crops that are alternatives to the standard winter cover cropping strategy. With the standard strategy, the cover crops are seeded as a solid stand and allowed to produce large amounts of biomass, which is usually mowed and then incorporated back into the soil in the spring. The residue then decomposes for about a month before the next vegetable is planted. We used this standard cover cropping strategy in the first 8 years of our long-term experiment before transplanted lettuce and then broccoli. And I can tell you it was pretty intense because we had to deal with lots of cover crop residue each spring. So the three alternative cover cropping strategies are essentially all ways to minimize problems or potential problems with cover crop residue management before spring vegetable plantings. Two of my good friends developed this strategy. It's a modification of bare winter fallow beds, which is the most common way to overwinter vegetable fields in Salinas. In the early fall, cereal cover crop seed is broadcast into the furrow bottoms of these peat beds. The cover crops allow it to produce about a quarter of the biomass of a full season cover crop before it's sprayed with a conventional herbicide. Then a few weeks later, the dead residue on the soil surface is easily incorporated back into the bed with a standard rolling cultivator right before the beds are shaped for the next vegetable planting. There's a really nice video with more details on this low residue approach, and I'd encourage you to check it out. This strategy isn't very good at reducing leaching, but it is an excellent way to reduce runoff and soil erosion, and it also increases water infiltration, which therefore helps to recharge the groundwater. This is a critical issue in Salinas because our agriculture is reliant on groundwater. This strategy seems most appropriate to conventional systems that can use herbicides to kill the cover crop and the fields with high runoff potential, and probably following vegetables with relatively low nitrate leaching potential. In the late 1980s, Dr. Louise Jackson and colleagues did pioneering research with nitrate leaching in Salinas vegetable systems by growing non-legume cover crops on beds. Even with relatively moderate amounts of winter cover crop biomass production, they found that two rows of rye reduced nitrate leaching by an amazing 70%. Now, the great thing about growing cover crops on beds is that it uses less seed, and it provides many more options for precise management than if the cover crop was planted in furrow bottoms or in a field without beds. And a minimum till disc can be used to incorporate the cover crop residue back into the bed, which can save time if the bed is reused for the next vegetable planting. Now, the problem is that incorporating large amounts of tough cover crop residue into beds can be challenging. And to reduce this challenge, we've been experimenting with repeated mowing of cereal cover crops during the winter. Our idea is that we'd be able to produce lots of biomass, and therefore capture lots of nitrate so that it doesn't leach in the groundwater, but that the repeated mowing would prevent the residue from becoming too tough and lignified, and as a result, the residue would be easier to incorporate into the bed in spring. I also assumed that the fibrous root systems of these cover crops, which would remain alive between mowings, would still be able to capture nitrogen that might be released by decomposing cover crop residue after it was mowed. There are so many creative ways that cover cropping on beds with repeated mowing could be integrated into vegetable rotations. And here's one example that I saw this year on an organic farm following lettuce. The lettuce residue was mowed, and then a single line of Sudan grass was planted into the bed center, and then it was allowed to grow with the lettuce regrowth, both which were mowed several times before the cover crop was terminated. A system like this might work really well after a fall harvested broccoli crop that could be mowed and then interplanted with a rye cover crop in the bed center. We're still in the early stages of evaluating this strategy with repeated mowing, but I think it's got a lot of potential, so stay tuned as we continue to work on it. So I hope you're ready to think out of the box, because this last strategy is definitely unusual, but it's one that I'm really excited about. I used some data from our long-term study to describe how it might work with a beautiful mustard winter cover crop that's planted, say, in mid-October, right after vegetables are harvested. Over several years, what we found is that nitrogen uptake or scavenging by mustard usually peaks by about mid-December, even though mustard biomass then is only about 40% of its final potential biomass. So my idea is that rather than allowing this cover crop to continue to grow and produce more shoot biomass that gradually becomes more fibrous and tough and complicates bed preparation for the next vegetable, we could harvest the shoots and process them and then apply that material back to the field when it's more convenient. This would allow us to plant our spring vegetables without having to deal with so much residue. At our research farm, the fresh weight of mustard shoots by mid-December would be similar to a typical compost application. And I estimate that the cost to harvest it would be relatively low. You're probably wondering, how do you process it? Well, here are two possible ways to deal with that nitrogen-rich, tender mustard shoot residue. The simplest way might be to store it like a silage crop and then compost it later in the season when the weather is warmer. Now, another exciting approach would be to run the high nitrogen residue through a large press. This is what's used to separate solids and liquids of dairy manure. The relatively dry cover crop solids could then be composted, and the nitrogen-rich liquid or juice from the cover crop could be stored and then applied back to the field as a liquid organic fertilizer that could be synchronized with the nitrogen needs of the next vegetable crop. We're in the early stages of evaluating this third strategy, but if we can figure out how to make it economically viable in high-value crops, it would allow us to make much more efficient use of cover crop residue and scavenged nitrogen while improving soil health with frequent cover cropping. I realize that some of the ideas I've presented aren't new, while others are pretty unique, perhaps a little crazy sounding. But I hope they'll inspire discussion, questions, and research to help us figure out how we can efficiently and creatively integrate cover crops frequently into vegetable production systems in many parts of the world, using the powerful tools of modern science and technology. That way we can produce all those nutritious vegetables that benefit our health, while protecting the health of our precious natural resources. Thanks for watching and stay tuned for more exciting, sustainable ag research.
Okay, time to talk.
What would you like to talk about or ask or throw in? I have a question. Strategy 3.
Unfortunately, we don't have a mic that we can spread around, so I got to try to repeat the question. So the question was, how did we measure that most of the nitrogen had been taken up by the cover crop? There still would be some leftover nitrogen in the soil, but what we found is that the nitrogen uptake peaks at about mid-December, and that's just based on tissue analysis. So that cover crop can't take up any more because it's maxed out already by mid-December, approximately there. So the question was whether or not there's any allelopathic effects from the juicing aspect. We have no idea yet. So, yeah, that's a good question.
Are there alternatives to mustard? Are there problems with brassicas following brassicas?
Yeah, so are there problems with brassicas following brassicas? There could be for disease reasons. But you could use even a rye cover crop. Generally peaks its nitrogen uptake at the similar time to mustard, so you could use rye in certain cases. Basically what we're after with that kind of crazy juicing idea is to use a really good scavenger, so a non-legume, to scavenge first and then remove that from the field. Rebecca? So what's the temperature profile in Salinas during the winter? It's a little bit, it's cooler than in the, this time of the year, but we can grow crops, a lot of vegetable crops year-round there. So we'll occasionally get frost, but the soil essentially never freezes.
What do you have an idea of the nitrogen percentage of the juice of the mustard?
So what's the nitrogen percentage of the mustard juice? I don't know what it is, but I know the percent on a dry weight basis is about 4 to 5% at that point. So it's pretty high concentration. That's pretty much when it's at its highest, because basically what a cover crop does is it takes up nitrogen in a relatively small amount of biomass at first, and then the rest of the season it just dilutes that nitrogen by fixing more carbon. And so we're trying to get it, or the idea is to get that residue pulled off when the carbon concentration relative to nitrogen is still pretty low.
Eric, I wanted to comment about the whole premise of needing much more land to produce green leafy vegetables. I think we need to be in the business of telling people that even lettuce, the amount of lettuce we use is just not a good nutritional approach. And so that if we get people to eat more green leafy vegetables, you produce more lettuce and produce more green leafy vegetables, that will solve part of the problem.
Yeah, so the comment was to try to encourage people to eat more nutritious dark green vegetables rather than maybe some of the less nutritious ones like iceberg lettuce. I think that's a good point. The trends do show that Americans are starting to choose more dark green lettuces. But even something like romaine is not nearly as nutritious as, say, kale is.
Exactly. So I'm saying that we need to be telling people that when we make a meal, instead of thinking about adding a salad that has lettuce, we should replace that salad with a cooked or non-cooked green leafy vegetable instead.
Yeah, so the idea is to change the vegetables from the less nutritious to the dark ones. I agree. I think that's a good point.
Maybe kale is fine to eat, but when it gets bigger, it has to be tasty and you got to use smoothies. Brussels will be releasing, we just tested a red leafy lettuce that has twice the antioxidant capacity of blueberries. It'll probably be the next superfood. So it worked out well about 28 this year, so we missed, and another 20 acres. So there will be an alternative to kale that's much more tasty and much more nutritious.
So the comment there was that there are going to be more nutritious lettuces coming out, and there was also a comment about how kale is a little bit on the challenging side taste-wise as it matures. I'll tell you, I eat a lot of kale, and if you put olive oil on it, give it a real good squeeze, which massages it, put a little bit of honey in there, some avocado, maybe some cran raisins, sunflower seeds. It's pretty darn good. My kids gobble it down.
So you mow that off in December? Is that?
Yeah, we would cut it off with like a silage harvester in say mid to late December.
What happens between December and April? Is that any regrowth or fallow?
Yeah. So the question is, do we have regrowth? Mustard, when you cut mustard, it tends not to regrow. If you cut rye, it would regrow like crazy, which is why you could do the repeated mowing of rye, but not with mustard. So, yeah, a brassica versus a grass is very different. Yeah, so are there any issues with storing the liquids? I've got no idea. This is still very early. But there could be some potential issues with that in terms of, the material separating out, decomposing. There could be some challenges with that, but we still need to work those out. Let's see. Actually, let me get, before people ask a second question, or you already asked one. Anybody else who didn't ask one that wants to ask one? Okay, go for another one. Oh, actually, you didn't get one. I'm sorry.
Option three, your option three. Did you use any other, or you plan to use any other cover crops to take care of the upfront uptake of nitrate? Because you were saying that it peaked in December. Are there any other cover crops or maybe a mixture of cover crops that you could use that more efficiently takes up nitrate quickly after the fall harvest?
You mean faster than mustard would?
Right. I don't know what they would be, but
yeah, we do use mixtures of legumes and cereals in California, but they generally aren't as good at taking up nitrogen, at least soil residual nitrogen, as mustard is or rye is. So mustard is pretty amazing in that way. You could use, say, a mixture of mustard maybe in a cereal, though. That would potentially give you the ability to pull off the residue and then get some regrowth again, maybe pull up some more nitrogen.
It sounds like maybe the combination would better satisfy your concern about erosion and runoff. It doesn't seem like the baby mustard is going to satisfy that.
Yeah, so the comments that mixture might be better at satisfying or reducing the erosion issue. That's a good idea. I think, we need to try all these different things and just kind of see what works. There are some challenges with seeding mixtures if the seed sizes are different, but you can get around those with a basic, a good planter.
Back.
Yeah, so the question is if we've tried a tillage reddish. I have a little packet of pretty expensive seed on my desk in the office, which I haven't tried yet, but we're interested in giving that a try.
I'd be interested in the economics of this. Can that be scaled to small acreage organic farms
Yeah, so the question is whether or not we figured out the economics. That's probably will be one of the main things that would either make this a completely crazy idea that's forgotten or one that might take off. What we do know is that to remove the residue is pretty inexpensive relative to the cost of production of our high-value crops. Mustard, a lot of vegetables are $5,000 to $7,000 production cost per acre. And strawberries that are rotated with them are about $35,000 an acre. So to harvest the mustard for, say, $120 an acre is pretty cheap. The processing aspect may be where there's some challenge. And you know, this idea of squeezing is maybe completely not a good idea, but I think it's worth trying, because some of our initial tests do show that the plants respond to that juice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the comments about some issues with soil-borne or seed-borne diseases from mustard cover crop seed, that's always a potential problem. That's why one could use, say, a cereal instead. Richard?
You talked about the organic alternative strategy. You wanted to mention that?
Maybe you can. You want to mention that one, Richard?
No.
You mean the mustard and the furrows?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the question was an organic alternative to strategy one, which is the low residue cover crops. One of the challenges with that low residue method is how do you kill the cover crop? And you can't kill a grass by just, you know, mowing it. And if you drive over it, it can be a real pain because it'll just lay down and then stand right back up after the tractor's gone by. We could potentially use mustard in the furrows, and try to kill that either with shallow tillage or with driving over the top of it or something like that. But I think the method's got a lot of potential, but we still have to try to figure out how to make it fit an organic system where you can kill it. And the other challenge in an organic system is you really don't want to have a lot of weed growth on the bed top. Of those peak beds, because those weeds would set seed that could then contaminate your or increase your weed seed bank. And so I think you'd want to select fields pretty carefully where you try that so that you don't get a weedy mess on the bed top, which is bare. There was another question I saw. Your hand. Yeah, so are we using biological tests of soil fertility or soil quality? We are using other indicators like nematode community analysis and things like that. And those do show that cover cropping frequently helps improve soil health and quality, but you have to cover crop. It's a short-lived effect. Frequent cover cropping is critical. You can't just assume one cover crop, you know, once every several years is going to do much. I don't want to take the next speaker's time, but thanks for your attention and your interest, and I'll be here and happy to, you know, share ideas with this for the rest of the time.